Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're looking at a really significant moment, the events in Qamishli, Syria, back in March 2004. We've got a range of materials here, reports, analysis, human rights documents, and our aim is to understand what happened, you know, the causes, and the immediate fallout in those years leading up to 2010, based strictly on these sources.
Absolutely. And to really get a handle on March 2004, you have to look back. There's this long history of marginalization for Syrian Kurds under the Ba'ath Party, decades of it. Our sources consistently point to the Kurdish population, maybe 10, 15%, mostly in the north and northeast, being treated, well, like second-class citizens.
Systematically, it seems.
Yes. Systematically excluded from important government jobs, military positions, and their areas were just deliberately underdeveloped.
And that 1962 census in Alasaka Governorate, that sounds particularly harsh.
Oh, it was devastating. It essentially stripped, estimates vary, maybe 120,000 to 150,000 Kurds of their Syrian citizenship. They were labeled Ajanib. Foreigners
in their own country.
Exactly. And this statelessness, it wasn't just them. It passed down to their children, their grandchildren. Then you had another category, the Maktoumeen, the unregistered. They were in an even more precarious legal spot.
So by 2004, we're talking about huge numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Kurds without basic rights.
That's right. No right to vote, couldn't own property legally, problems registering marriages, no passports, couldn't get state jobs, limited access to university.
And they had ID cards actually marking them as foreigners.
Yes. Explicitly stating that. It was institutionalized discrimination.
Wow. And it wasn't just legal status, was it? It extended to culture, too.
Deeply. The Kurdish language, Kurmanji, was banned, not just in official settings, but in schools, workplaces, even private parties sometimes.
You couldn't use Kurdish names?
No. Or have Kurdish signs for your business. Kurdish music, books, publications, all forbidden. Even Nowruz, the Kurdish New Year, a huge cultural event, was severely restricted.
And they Arabized place names too, I read?
Yes, part of this broader assimilation policy, trying to erase Kurdish identity from the landscape.
On top of all that, there was the Arab Belt program starting in the 70s.
Right. The government actively resettled Arab families into Kurdish-majority areas, especially along the borders.
The stated goal, or at least the clear effect, was changing the demographics.
Precisely. And, you know, that inevitably created friction over land, over resources, serious tensions.
Then there's the PKK factor, the Kurdistan Workers' Party. That relationship seems complicated.
Very. Syria, under Hafez al-Assad, had supported the PKK for a while.
But that changed.
It did, with the 1998 Adana agreement with Turkey. After that, Syria had to clamp down, so repression increased against Kurds suspected of having PKK ties. And it's interesting, around this time, new Syrian Kurdish parties started popping up, like the PYD in 2003.
Influenced by the PKK's ideas, really?
Yes, influenced by the PKK's evolving ideology, absolutely.
Okay, so leading into early 2004... you've got this powder keg, really. Decades of discrimination, cultural suppression, the air-built tensions, the PKK situation.
Exactly. A really volatile atmosphere, especially in mixed cities like Qamishli. Tension between Kurds and some Arab settlers.
And then the Iraq invasion in 2003. Did that play a role?
It seems likely. The U.S.-led invasion and the empowerment of Iraqi Kurds definitely changed the regional dynamics. It might have caused anxiety for some Syrian Arabs, perhaps made some Syrian Kurds feel more assertive.
And the Syrian regime itself was feeling pretty isolated internationally at that point.
Yes, which probably made them even more sensitive to any signs of internal unrest.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Let's turn to March 12, 2004, the football match.
Right. It seems like such an ordinary event, a local match in Qamishli, Al-Jihad, the Kurdish-supported team against Al-Fatwa from Deir ez-Zor, mostly Arab supporters.
But it wasn't just about football.
No. Reports say Al-Fatwa fans started chanting provocative slogans, insulting Iraqi Kurdish leaders. Some apparently even had pictures of Saddam Hussein.
Which would have been incredibly inflammatory.
Yeah, highly. And then some Kurdish fans reportedly reacted, some sources say, by praising George W. Bush. Things just exploded. Clashes broke out inside the stadium, outside. People using sticks, stones, knives. It got violent fast.
And the security forces' response, the sources seem pretty consistent here.
Yes, reports indicate a biased response, heavily targeting the Kurdish fans. And crucially, there are widespread allegations that security forces used live ammunition almost immediately.
Live ammunition on the crowd.
That's what the sources claim, resulting in 6 to 9 deaths right there at the stadium on the 12th. All Kurds, including children.
Some early reports mentioned trampling, but later ones focused on gunfire.
Yes, the consensus from later reports, human rights groups, points strongly towards gunfire as the primary cause of death at the stadium.
Those deaths must have changed everything.
Completely. It went from a stadium riot to something much bigger, an uprising. The next day, March 13th, the funerals for the victims. They became massive demonstrations in Qamishli. Angry demonstrations.
People were chanting anti-regime slogans.
Anti-Bashar al-Assad slogans, yes, and raising Kurdish flags, which was a huge act of defiance.
And the response?
More violence, tragically. Security forces reportedly fired into the funeral procession, indiscriminately. One source claims as many as 23 people were killed just on that day, the 13th.
So the protests spread?
Like wildfire. Beyond Qamishli to other Kurdish towns and cities all across the north and northeast, Amuda, Afrin, Kobani, Hasaka, Derek, Sarikani, the list goes on.
Even into Kurdish neighborhoods in Aleppo and Damascus.
Yes. People started attacking symbols of the Ba'ath Party. The party office in Qamishli was burned down.
And they pulled down a statue of Hafez al-Assad.
They did, a very potent symbol. Other government buildings were targeted too. In Amuda, reports say a police station was attacked.
This sounds like the first time something like this had happened on this scale.
It really was the first large-scale, violent Kurdish uprising against the Syrian state. Unprecedented.
How did the Syrian government react overall?
Swiftly. And with overwhelming force. They sent in the military, thousands of troops, tanks, even helicopters into Qamishli and other towns. Security forces launched massive crackdowns. Reports consistently mention excessive, often lethal, force against largely unarmed civilians.
And there were claims the government used Arab tribes against the protesters.
Yes, there are concerning reports suggesting the government armed or utilized some local Arab tribes to help suppress the Kurdish protests.
Then came the arrests.
Mass arrests. Estimates are over 2,000 people detained, mostly Kurds, in the days and weeks after March 12th.
Often arbitrary arrests.
Seemingly so. Mm-hmm. Targeting a wide range of people, even children. And many were held incommunicado, you know, cut off from family and lawyers. Huge concern for their safety.
And what happened to those detained? The reports are grim.
Extremely grim. Credible sources documented widespread torture and ill treatment. We're talking severe beatings, electric shocks, pulling out fingernails, burns. Truly brutal methods.
And people died in detention.
At least 5 or 6 Kurds reportedly died as a result of torture or mistreatment in the months following.
Were there any investigations?
Apparently not. Reports indicate a complete lack of accountability. Syria actually joined the UN Convention Against Torture later that year, in August 2004.
Oh.
But crucially, they entered a reservation against Article 20. That's the article that allows for independent investigations into torture allegations.
So effectively blocking independent scrutiny.
Exactly.
How did the Syrian government portray these events publicly?
They downplayed it, called them riots, blamed foreign forces trying to destabilize Syria. Sometimes they alleged that Syrian Kurdish groups were working with outsiders to, you know, annex Syrian land to Iraq.
Did Assad visit the region?
Yes. Bashar al-Assad visited after the crackdown. The government announced some pardons for detainees.
But not for everyone.
No. Key activists were often left out. And they took other punitive measures, like expelling Kurdish students from universities if they were thought to have been involved. Even peacefully.
What was the immediate human cost? The bottom line.
Significant. Official Syrian figures said 25 dead. But Kurdish sources, human rights groups, they estimated much higher number of at least 30, maybe up to 43 deaths. Overwhelmingly Kurds.
And injuries.
Over 160 reported injuries.
And people fled.
Yes, a wave of displacement. Thousands of Syrian Kurds escaped into the Kurdistan region of Iraq. Refugee camps like Mokabla were set up by the UNHCR and others. Many people ended up staying in those camps for years.
Oh. Hand of the Chai Ladies here? Roj Bosh Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing.
Oh, this smells wonderful today. Really fragrant, that cardamom.
Let's see.
Yeah, that's good. Nice and strong, but not too bitter. Seems like she got the sugar just right for me today. Excellent.
Mine too. Okay, a quick moment for this lovely chai.
All right. Back to it. So after the immediate crackdown, what was the longer-term impact in the following years leading up to 2010?
Well, the uprising clearly led to heightened repression, more surveillance of the Kurdish population. The government took a much harder line. They essentially said Kurdish gatherings, political activity, no longer tolerated, full stop.
So they actively suppress things.
Very actively. Breaking up demonstrations, cultural events like Nowruz, even commemorations of the 2004 events themselves, and sometimes using lethal force doing it. Like in 2008, 3 Kurds were killed during Nowruz celebrations.
Even small acts were cracked down on.
Yes, reports mention even school children doing minor things to remember 2004, facing investigations by security.
And Kurdish political figures.
Activists.
Increased persecution. Arrests, trials, often in special courts like military courts or the Supreme State Security Court. The charges were usually vague, like inciting strife, very broad.
And if you were known to have been involved or even just injured during the uprising,
you often ended up on a security red list, which basically barred you from getting any government job, another layer of punishment.
But despite all this increased repression, did it actually dampen Kurdish political feeling?
Paradoxically, no. It seems the 2004 uprising actually increased political consciousness, boosted assertiveness among Syrian Kurds. It became known as the Sirhildin, the uprising, a really pivotal moment in their collective memory. The Sirhildin.
Yes. It showed a collective will to resist, to demand rights, even after years of oppression. Some saw it as the start of a new political phase, emphasizing more Kurdish self-reliance.
That's interesting. And did the regime's attempt to frame it as an ethnic conflict work? Did it divide Kurds and Arabs more?
From the reports we have, it seems that largely failed, which is quite significant. In fact, some sources suggest that newer Kurdish groups like the PYD actually started reaching out, building connections with Arab opposition figures.
Finding common ground against the state.
Exactly. Recognizing shared grievances against authoritarian rule. So the uprising solidified Kurdish opposition, yes, but it also might have planted seeds for future cross-ethnic cooperation.
So looking back from, say, 2010, how should we understand the Qamishli uprising?
It was definitely a dramatic moment. This overt, large-scale Kurdish anti-government protest was unprecedented in Syria. It clearly surprised the government, and it got international attention, which was new.
The regime called it riots, but others saw more.
Right. Some Syrian opposition figures viewed it as part of a bigger challenge to the whole system. And for many, many Kurds, it was a watershed, a powerful demonstration of their identity and their ability to act collectively despite everything.
But the immediate legacy was also
more control, a definite hardening of the state's position, intensified repression in those years leading up to 2011.
So the events of March 2004 in Qamishli, they grew out of decades of marginalization, sparked by that football match, but clearly reveal a critical point in the story of Syria and its Kurdish population. These sources really highlight the deep grievances, the state's forceful reaction, and the consequences that shaped that whole period before 2011.
It's striking, isn't it, how all these threads, discriminatory laws, cultural bans, the Arab belt, regional politics, even a football game just came together in that moment. And the scale of the government's response, the military, the mass arrests, the torture allegations, it really underscores how threatened the regime felt by Kurdish aspirations. They saw it as fundamental.
But as you said, the sources also suggest this repression had an unintended effect. It seems to have fueled a stronger political identity, a desire for self-reliance within the Kurdish community. The uprising, the Sirhildin, despite the terrible human cost, became this marker, influencing politics later on, maybe even building bridges, potentially, with other opposition groups.
Absolutely. And the story we've pieced together today, straight from these documents and analyses, gives us a vital glimpse into Syria's complex dynamics before the upheaval of 2011. It really leaves us with a crucial question, doesn't it? How did this pivotal moment in 2004, with its patterns of repression and resistance, ultimately feed into the larger transformative events that began to unfold across Syria in the following years?
That's definitely something to reflect on as you continue exploring this history. Thank you for joining us on the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.